Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Today, I have a returning guest on the podcast, and that is the most beautiful woman, Courtney Lancaster. Thanks for coming back on.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
Yeah, we just spent the last basically hour catching up and talking. So it was so fun. We have so much in common. Courtney is, if you haven't listened to the last podcast, we talked about our dreams need our healing, and we talked about inner child work, a little bit about the nervous system. And so you guys can go check that last podcast out. But Courtney is a trauma-informed nervous system coach, and she's based in Southern California with her husband and her kids. But she's not only a coach, she's an artist herself. She's a worship leader, singer-songwriter. And so she really, Courtney, you really embody the work, so to speak. Like, you not only help people and talk about healing, you actually, you know, brave yourself and put yourself out there with creativity. So very excited to have you back on.
Thank you. So, thank you for saying all that. That was so kind.
Oh, you're so awesome. And so today I was like, because we're doing a wholehearted series, and I think you even mentioned like some of the introduction to emotional health and healing was through the work of Dr. Brené Brown.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, you'd be a great person to talk about the topic of, which is not a fun topic, but talk about the topic of shame. And so I was like, I'm going to invite you on to talk about that.
Yeah.
And so I would love to hear from you, maybe like how you would define shame and a bit about like how shame's shown up in your story.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Well, the fun thing about shame is that understanding it and then healing it opens up your whole life. And so shame is kind of a fun topic in that way, that it's such a door to moving forward. And the way that I always define shame is, shame is the perceived disconnection from love. Shame is the belief that you are disconnected from love or have been disconnected from love, either temporarily or all the time, because of who you are. And what is so interesting about it, and Sarah Baldwin, who is, I've worked with, she's a nervous system coach in America, she says shame is the internalization of what happened to you. So we actually, human beings, we are not born to experience shame. We are born wired for love and connection.
Yeah.
And then we are, of course, all of us are born into this, you know, imperfect world with imperfect parents. I think Gabor Mate would say we're all victims of victims. Not that we're victims as an identity, but that in the way that we were all born into imperfection, but our bodies were wired for love and connection all the time. And so we learn shame when we have these experiences of being with parents who either aren't able to fill our needs, like actual physical needs, or also just as detrimentally our emotional needs, which we've that's only been confirmed as you know, just as detrimental to human well-being as like physical needs in the last 50 years. Like that wasn't even, you know, a thing. As a matter of fact, when I was being raised in Christian culture especially, it was very behavior-based parenting. So, which just means your the presence and love and connection was given to you based on what you do. And so when we... our little kids, if we don't have experiences of parents that are able to be with us, not only fulfilling all of our external needs, like we said, but like it, with us in our emotions, able to give us that message, like there's nothing that you could do or say or be that would keep me from supporting you, loving you, being with you, and helping you through this life. And because we, I mean, I don't personally know a ton of people who had that perfectly growing up at all. Yeah. A little kid's brain can't actually say, oh, there must be something wrong with my parents. They're really distracted, yeah, or they have addiction. That's not good. Or gosh, there must be something wrong with them because they're really anxious and depressed. A little kid's brain would literally can't say that. What a little kid's brain does is go, there must be something wrong with me. My parents aren't giving me the connection that I'm here for, and that must be my fault. It's actually a way of trying to get control, any kind of control of the situation, because the only person a kid can control is themselves. So mm-hmm. then they just learn that if I change myself or hide myself, and this is all like, excuse me, very like cellular, subconscious, yeah, nervous system level thinking, survival, primal thinking. If I can just learn how to make myself smaller or shift myself into what they want me to be, then I can secure their love.
Yeah.
So, you know, so many of us are like what you would call like the feelers, or like empathetic, or just like very sensitive. And yes, there are like more sensitive dispositions, but so often that sensitivity comes from, if you didn't have parents that were attuned to you, then you learned how to attune to the people in the room. And that's what makes so many of us so highly sensitive and such feelers. So that connects to shame, because we did that for survival. As adults, however, we still do that. And if we don't, if we're not people-pleasing or hiding or doing what we can to keep ourselves safe, maybe we step out, maybe we say, express a need, maybe we just aren't having, maybe we just aren't acting perfectly like a normal human, then we will experience that learned, perceived disconnection from love, which is shame. And it, yeah, permeates through our lives and the way that we do things. And so, yeah, shame is a beast, but it's not. It's shame is a survival tactic. It's like a warning sign saying you are about to be, yeah, disconnected if you don't change what you're doing or hide yourself. And it's actually a feeling in your body before mm-hmm. it's a thought.
Yes, that's so true.
So it's, yeah, it's not like we think we're like lost in these stories. I'm such an idiot. What am I doing? Oh my gosh, are they mad at me? Like, I can't show up on social media. I can't write that song. I can't do blah, 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 blah. But that's actually – that's not the whole story. The whole story is your body is literally sensing a disconnection from love. And it's, yeah, trying to convince you to do whatever you can to keep that from happening.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'll stop there. I feel like there's so much more that I could say, but yeah.
Because I think you're right, because when Brené Brown came on the scene, she started talking about her research around shame. And then you mentioned before we got on the call the gap in maybe the research at the time,
yes,
because,
yeah,
we've come so far, even from finding the language, is like the nervous system piece.
Yeah.
Because shame shows up, like, it's not just that moment where, like, you know, you do something quote unquote wrong and then you feel shame. It shows up in like our being of like,
yep,
why we people please, why we're aggressive, why we get really, yeah, angry.
Yeah.
So can you speak to like the nervous system connected to shame, like that missing, yeah, piece that maybe wasn't in the research initially?
Yes. Well, everything that your body is trying to do is to keep you from a perceived disconnection from love, because primally love equals safety.
Hmm.
Safety is belonging. I mean, if you think like, you know, ancestrally, like belonging to your tribe. Like if you were out on your own in the jungle, you would die. So mm-hmm. we have like this primal need to belong. We also have the need to be connected to resources, the need to be able to, like this very primal need to stay connected to other safe people and then collecting resources so that we can take care of ourselves and our family. So like this is a very... We don't need to be ashamed about shame.
It's, yeah,
like such a biological, yeah, response to the fear of being disconnected and alone. Mm.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I would say it's pushback, but the interesting thing about Brené Brown's work is, like I said, she was the entry point to emotional health for millions and millions of people. Like that TED Talk was, I literally just looked up today because I was looking for a different TED Talk, like the top TED Talks ever. And she's like number five. Like she, which is, I mean, like millions and millions and millions of views. Yeah. Because she was the first person to be like, hey, have you noticed we all struggle with this?
Mm.
Have you noticed that like this is a universal experience?
Mm-hmm.
And what she suggests is that we have to learn how to be vulnerable. We just have to show up. We have to be vulnerable. So since then, what we've learned is that, well, actually, if your body doesn't feel safe, it's actually, it's not as easy as just showing up.
Yeah.
Because what people have done or could do potentially is just show up, overriding their nervous system that's trying to tell them not to show up, and then totally crashing with anxiety or panic or depression, you know, before, during, or after, and have no idea why, but I was vulnerable. I showed up. I did it. So that's why, like, understanding your nervous system, how your nervous system will put you into a self-protective state of fight, flight, or freeze, in order to keep you from showing up, if it thinks that you showing up is actually going to decrease your chances of belonging and connection.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. I mean, I think that's like, because you're an artist, you work with creatives. So what are the self-protection things that you see most in yourself and in your clients, like to protect from that awful feeling of shame?
Yes. We artists and creatives are so many of it. You don't have to actually be creating something to be, to consider yourself a creative or an artist. But the way that creatives' brains work and their bodies work, and the way that they're wired to kind of see the world is through this sort of sense of freedom of imagination, connected to your emotions, connected to empty spaces that you see that you want to fill with something beautiful, from your perspective. The amount of self-trust that you need to be able to do all of those things is immense, because we are creating something from nothing with no guarantees of how it will be perceived or how we will be perceived because we made it or did it. The amount of open space that creatives have to face when we're remembering what open space meant to like our ancestors, which is like a lion could be in the bushes, is a very, it's a big wall to get over. So combined with the fact that we live in like such a rapidly evolving technological landscape and it's like so many extra threats anyways to our brain. So you sort of have to think of the human body as like this threat holding system.
Yeah.
And it's just, it can only hold so much before it will start to tip over into self-protection, like anxiety, confusion, depression, total freeze, dissociation. So what I see is, especially for like artists and creatives, is like massive self-doubt, questioning. I think the confusion in general is like the most brilliant self-protective strategy that I've ever seen. And I feel like just watching people with their nervous systems, like the ways that your nervous system can actually convince you to not do things is like brilliant. Like I've heard it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll make you question your identity. It'll make you worry about what people think about you. It'll make you worry if you do I even love this art? Do I even like this? It'll make you question your motives. It will just leave you in this confused fog for so long, or you'll just shut down completely and you will feel disconnected from the thing that you used to once love. And it's all because the artist is usually so sensitive. So they've been attuning to people their whole lives to make sure that they're safe, that they're protected from that perceived disconnection from love or sense of shame, combined with wanting to do something that is, they can't guarantee will continue to keep them safe. It's not like being a banker.
Mm-hmm.
The road to being like a lawyer or a doctor is pretty clear.
Yeah.
Also, being a lawyer or a doctor, pretty guaranteed to be needed by society forever.
Yes.
You it's are true. Your sense of belonging, check. Your sense mm-hmm. of feeling needed, having a purpose, check, check. Like mm-hmm. there's so many career paths outside of the creative realms that just guarantee your biological being all of the things that it's craving.
Yeah.
Security. Creativity is the opposite. Yeah. Security. Yeah. Security, yeah. which helps you feel safe. So telling artists to just go for it. Oh my gosh, just like do it. Like just post the thing, write the song, write the book. Like it's like what we're telling people is like, just go into the field. There, maybe there's lions, but like who cares? It's going to be so fun. Like it, your brain's like, okay. Your body's like, hell no.
Yeah.
For a lot of us.
And then you have, and then you have shame because you're like, yeah, I really have been procrastinating, writing and doing my morning pages every day or like practicing my instrument and oh my gosh, I'm the worst. I'm not disciplined.
Yeah,
can you speak
I know.
To that a little bit? Because then we shame ourselves.
Shame
for
ourselves for being ashamed.
For being ashamed and like not putting ourselves out there. So yeah, can you speak to that of like how we what that is, like why we do avoid putting ourselves out there.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we avoid putting ourselves out there for feeling the risk of being rejected, which is a terrible feeling mm-hmm. to a human body. It doesn't always have to be. There are ways to heal that, build that resilience.
Yeah.
And to build relationship with the parts of us that are so afraid of it.
Yes.
But before that work is done, it feels horrible. It feels so terrible. And yet the need to contribute is also very human.
Yeah.
The need to like be your authentic self, it's just not going to leave you alone because that's what mm-hmm. you're here to be. Like we are like a well-loved child has, mm-hmm. you probably know, I always talk about this, like coming back to like our identity as well-loved children. That mm-hmm. is like, whether you're a Christian or not, that is the highest level of human well-being. If there's a child that is deeply loved as a kid with parents that resourced them, supported them, loved them, made them feel like they belong to something important, then they actually don't grow up to be afraid to express themselves and contribute. That's not really a thought. Because they know on a really like cellular level that they're safe. So like I said, there's so few of us that like actually had that experience, but it is possible to create it now. Something like 97% of what we're afraid of doesn't actually happen, which feels really mm-hmm. like crazy to believe in this world where we're getting so much bad news through constant media, but it's true. You think about all the things that you've worried about and mm-hmm. so few of them happen. And when they do happen, there's always that potential that they actually are going to be a part of your story and help you grow. So we can look at all of that and be like, wow, the fear is actually like, I'm really afraid for nothing. But then we have to do the work of helping our body learn that, mm-hmm. that bravery and resilience and safety and vulnerability, which takes time and practice.
Yeah. And I encourage everyone who's listening to really take the logic that Courtney's saying that, what was it, 97%, 95% of what we feared doesn't happen. Yeah. And how does that feel in your body when she says that? Like recognize, like when you said that, I felt like—
I was going to ask you.
Relief.
Yeah.
Like it's, I think because I've also gone on a nervous system journey as like, I need to pay attention to when someone says something that feels liberating. Like, you know, rather than just, oh yeah, I know that most of what I fear doesn't happen, but let's go a little deeper and recognize where did I feel that when she said that? Because that actually just cleared up a few cobwebs in my mind.
Yeah,
like totally fears I've been replaying. You know,
yes, Well, that technically is nervous system work. So like, I think is where you got that idea, because to your brain, what's the saying? Good news is like Teflon. Bad news is like Velcro.
Ooh, that's
so
good.
So your nervous system has a survival imperative to collect, well, your reticular activating system in your brain is technically what it's called, to collect evidence of things going wrong, bad things that could happen to you. A biological imperative for your survival. It does not care about your dreams, about your hopes. There's somebody said like your trauma eats affirmations for breakfast. Like meaning your body in fear doesn't actually naturally do what you just did, which is like pay attention to how it felt to receive good news. But once you start, you can hack your brain and your nervous system and just even like you would at Google, how do or you could say something like, wow, look at all of the beautiful things around me. Or like, wow, that was really good. That was really good news. That helped me to feel grounded and open and safe. And then your brain's like, just looking for patterns on your behalf. It'll start looking more and more for that. And if you combine that with like how it feels in your body, then what you're doing is you are over time increasing your ability to be seen, to be vulnerable, to be expressed, because you're increasing your level of safety. And that's like the big thing that Brené Brown didn't have all the information around yet, is that it actually takes a lot of safety in your body to be vulnerable.
Yeah. And I think building up a tolerance to be able to go do the brave thing, like, you know, like put yourself out there. It's like if I have a client that comes to me and they're kind of in survival mode and they want to launch the business and they want to do like, I don't know, do this wild, brave thing. I'm kind of like, let's slow your roll.
It's
like you'll probably self-destruct by doing that many brave things, you know?
All in a row.
But something that this quote always has impacted me a lot, especially, and I'm sure you relate to it, having your own podcast and putting your story out there. And I think a lot of people, I think by the time you get to your 30s, you're like, whew, I have lived. I've had some
especially
experiences.
Now.
Yeah. And like, you know, before we got on the call, we both were like, we've had these experiences.
Yes.
It's kind of crazy. But I want to share a quote that Brené Brown says. She says, when we deny our stories, they define us. When we own our stories, we get to write the ending. And I love that because there's hope. And I think that a lot of like what we are doing, even when you go into dating or whatever, you're trying to hide. I don't want that person to find out this about me or to see this in me. Or I've even putting a podcast out there, or I've interviewed a lot of people who are telling their story for the first time, and then the attack that can happen after, like, oh, I fully was brave and I shared my story. And so would you have some like pointers, like, because there's often like when we share our story and start owning who we are, whether it's in dating or you're putting your work, maybe it's a creative thing that you're putting out, but it does have parts of your story because you're a writer.
Yeah.
Like, and then you do get a negative response, because sometimes it's like we spend a lot of time talking about like, let's just get you launched and put yourself out there. But what about the people that where they do share their story and it doesn't go well? So how do we do what Brené is talking, is really like learning to not let the story define us. Like if that was maybe we made a mistake or failed in part of our story or didn't do it well, how do we not let our stories own us or the stories that other people make up about us? How do we do that? It's a long question.
No, I think it's really great. Honestly, we have to know who we actually are.
Yeah.
That's the only way. And we have to return to that identity every day. I don't know that there is a sustainable way without returning to your true identity and remembering who you are every single day to withstand the other people's projections onto you too, which I don't know. Somebody just said like, well, what is projection? And I'm like, oh, I guess that is something that we should probably define more often, especially if we're talking about shame, because if everything is a mirror, means whatever people say or think about you actually has to do with how they see the world, which has to do with the beliefs about themselves and the beliefs that they were passed on, the wounds that are unhealed in them. And I learned this lesson last year when I was on another podcast, and they had asked me a question that I answered very freely because they were my friends, and it's kind of a thing I didn't really think much of. And this clip went absolutely viral, and it was like me saying something that, in hindsight, I don't know that I would say it exactly the same way, but it was highly, highly triggering and offensive to a bunch of people. And I mean, like, it went viral. And the people were like, she is, I can't believe her. She is so, on this podcast, I'll say, the podcast is called, actually, I won't say what the podcast is, but I'll just say, they're drinking on the podcast. That's like part of their shtick. They just like always, not like drinking to get drunk. They just all have a drink. Yeah. I don't personally really drink, but they gave me one. I think I had like one sip. And people were like, I can't believe that she would be drinking and talking about this. I can't believe that she needs to read her Bible more. She must be so lost. Somebody said she must be so traumatized that she would even have that opinion. And it wasn't even that crazy of an opinion, but I was just, what I learned from that experience was like, well, that's our worst fear, right? We're going to have like millions of people like say that you're probably so lost and traumatized. And I think like we have I had the opportunity, and it was dysregulating. It was scary to experience that, but I had the opportunity to say, okay, what about what they're saying is true, if anything? What can I own? What can I learn from? And very little of what they said was true, but there were a couple of things that I'm like, okay, noted, yeah. And then I got to look at all of these angry people like talking about somebody they saw on YouTube and just feeling like, wow, this really has nothing to do with me. Who they think that I am is not true. That's not who I am, because I know who I am. And you just see everybody's, all of their internal anger and fear coming out towards you. And then it's almost like if a dart was coming towards you and you're like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then you realize it's like going to the side of you. That's how I felt. I was like, oh my gosh, they're saying all these terrible things. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then I like watched it and I was like, oh, but that's not who I am at all. That's not even who I am. And so I think like, you know, that story I could have made mean there's something wrong with me. I should never be on podcasts. I shouldn't say things like, and once I was able to like really look at it from like, oh, every human is just doing the best they can. Everybody's just reacting to what they see.
Yeah.
I also really know who I am. Then I was able to change that narrative in my mind of like, that was actually kind of like a test that I passed.
Yes.
As far as like not internalizing it. And it's a test I would have failed in the past.
Yes.
So, oh, yeah. I think that would just lead us to ask like, well, how do we know who we really are then?
Yeah.
And
because it's a very Christian thing to say. Just know who you are.
Like, you know. Which I was raised in, you know, Christianity my entire life. I've been a worship leader since I was 15 years old. And that idea didn't do anything. Well, there are a lot of beautiful things about Christianity, but like if it was as easy as just saying this Christian thing, then that would have worked for me a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I had my big breakdown of massive anxiety and panic when I was into my 30s, and I genuinely had no idea who I was.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Does that make sense?
And I feel like the more people admit that they don't know themselves, the closer to knowing themselves they are.
It's so true. It's very scary, especially for the creative who has a big imagination. If you don't know who you are, you could be a billion different things. But you are absolutely right. Nothing changes unless you look at it. So if you actually look at the fact that you don't know who you are, that's the first step in figuring out who the heck you are.
Yeah. And I more and more, the older I get, the less fixed I get about who I am, but the clearer I am. Like, because, you know, you're talking about, like, it kind of, that story really hooks into probably my shadow, and like some psychologists would call shame shadow, your shadow side, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think for me, the talking about, especially because growing up in the church, you want to be really theologically sound, like, and you don't want to lead people astray. And I've been a leader in that space. So, and the beautiful thing is, because I've been teaching on emotional health, and so you have blending a lot of, and I've taught on spiritual and emotional health. So for me, like, I have had so much feedback because I've worked with college students who are going to give you their feedback and they're going to tell you where you are wrong. And so I've had to like consistently like had this shadow space hit, you know, of like, you know, is she sound? Is she right? Like, you know, that thing. And it used to really, really cripple me of like, okay, well, I better say more scripture. I better, you know, make sure that I'm aligning right so that, you know, it turned me into this fawn response of like, that's how my shame reacted. Now I'm a little bit like, because the feedback piece, like, I love that you mentioned that, because I actually did need to develop my language. Yes. So, and actually bring more depth. And so while it was reactive coming at me of like, that's not right or whatever, I actually got to kind of like, and the both sides, like some people would have pain, like church pain. And so they get so offended that I'm bringing up something biblical, and so you're getting offense both ways.
Yeah, so, totally. It's so true.
Yeah.
You're not, so you're not Christian enough, or you're too Christian.
Yeah. So I think it's like the owning piece is like accepting that we're always going to be developed in like learning how to articulate things well. But I think what you're talking about is you didn't internalize like, I am bad.
Right.
I am corrupt because I said this thing.
Right.
Can you speak more to like maybe like the core lies that, because I think some people really do walk around with this fear of corruption, like that I'm the worst person. Yeah. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I think that like that, I just have walked through people, experiencing a lot of like condemnation and shame because they put themselves out there and maybe it wasn't the best received.
Yeah. You know? So like personally for me, what the lies were, or?
Yeah. Like, because you mentioned like, I passed a test, because I think we get the same test over and over.
Yeah, totally.
until we're like, I've really integrated this
build up thing. That muscle. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So like the old you, like where would you have spiraled, I guess?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know what was interesting? The hardest comment that I got was, she must be so, it said, this is what it said. That poor girl, she must be so traumatized. And I
stood out when you said that. Yeah.
I know. And I don't totally know how they got there, but it cut right to my shame, which is that I did struggle with depression and anxiety and mental health for a long time and was so ashamed of it because I was not raised in a culture where it was normalized at all. And as a matter of fact, like in my family line and then even in my religious culture, those were just like, they were crazy people or they were, I don't know, possessed people. Like it wasn't like this normalized thing that we give compassion on now that we understand as like a normal survival response to be traumatized. It was like something that was dangerous and something that I literally saw people leave other people because they were so uncomfortable around. So I held in for years all of my anxieties and masked it very, very well because I was so terrified to express how scared I was inside. And then yes. after my second son was born, it all came to the surface. And I was just terrified that everyone was going to leave me because I wasn't okay. I was terrified. And I have my like tried and true people that marched with me through those dark years. But I did have a lot of people that like didn't know what to do and kind of took a step back. And it was so utterly painful. And at that point, I didn't yet know that like I will never leave myself. So when I saw that comment, it was like, ugh, like they saw the thing I'm most ashamed of. And the thing that I try so hard to like, I have tried so hard to hide in the past. And I just was like, I remember being like, ouch. And then like, yeah, that poor girl was so traumatized. Yes, Courtney, myself, I went through a lot of things that I hope no one will ever have to go through. And I know now that I'm okay. I know that I have a indestructible connection to the love of God. I know now that I will never leave myself, which is the thing that I think God's been leading me to my whole life, is that like I will never abandon myself. I will only ever show myself compassion like Jesus did with everybody else.
Yeah.
And so knowing that that unwavering like allegiance to my own heart, my own like my compassion for myself is so indestructible now that it was just like, oh, like it was like, yeah, you're right. Like I was traumatized I'm okay. And you know, my anxiety and depression have made me really, really strong. And now I get to help people from it. I know what it's like to live on the other side of anxiety, which that's something that I don't think a lot of people really know. If you've been in years of anxiety and depression, it's like something, like I know what it's like to actually come through the other side of it. And I always say like, if I can heal, anybody can heal. And so it's just something that I'm so proud of that I kind of worked through it and like, oh yeah. Yep, they saw my shadow, and like I have integrated my shadow though, so I'm okay. The other thing I will say, this is like, this does not heal on a deep level, but I realized how short the attention span is of the world. I'm like, 5 minutes later, it stopped getting views. Or not 5 minutes, it's probably like 5 days.
Yeah.
You know, but like nobody's like sitting there right now like, a year later, I can't believe she said that. Who does she think she is? You know what I mean? Like nobody cares. There is a new, we're talking today about there's like a scandal in the news even today. And I'm just like, I'm even like so fascinated by it. But, which we can talk about. But I'm just like, truly the attention span is so short and it's getting worse. So like if you fail publicly, you can know that like people will forget tomorrow. Somebody else will fail tomorrow.
Yeah. And I think, well, it's really interesting because the scandal that she's talking about is the Coldplay scandal. And I know it's probably died by the time this episode comes out. It'll be, you know, another month. I mean, we're all kind of fascinated with like, who is this CEO and this HR director? Yeah. Like, you know, being caught on the Kiss camera, their affair exposed to the world. And it is horrible. It's so horrible. And I think this is like, I was like, oh, it's ironic I'm talking about shame with Courtney, because I think this is kind of how our shadow, I think, when it's driving our car, like running the show, feels, I think, kind of to point to your 95% of what happens doesn't happen. But I know this feeling of like, I'm going to be outed publicly. I'm going to be shamed publicly. And in this situation, I think that I don't think it's so much in Australian culture yet, but in America, it feels like they're showing more redemption of humans now. Like there was like this hard cancel culture. But then you kind of see people, I'm going to rewrite the narrative. Like a person that was very publicly shamed was Carl Lentz in the church world. Having that affair. And he is now, after a lot of like needed solitude and being away from being everything out there, is rewriting his story. So I feel like that is happening a bit more and more. So I have that hope for these couple. But yeah, could you speak to the scenario here with the Coldplay concert?
Yeah. So what happened? Yeah, the CEO and the HR director and
it's ironic, isn't
exposed.
It?
It's so ironic. It's so sad.
Yeah.
I think what's, you know, ironic is how often this happens. All the time. This stuff happens all the time. Like the chances of the camera on them is like, and I just read an interview with the girl who recorded them, and she's like, I just thought it was an interesting moment on the Kiss Cam. I didn't think that it was like gonna destroy their lives and blow up. She's like, but you know, she said, play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. And I'm like, yeah, that is, it's kind of true. So I think, like, you know, when we're talking about, like, it's what is also really interesting is why we want to shame people. It actually makes us feel safer to shame other people. And that is also how our human bodies are biologically wired, which is wild. Because if you think, again, if we go back to like how our bodies are wired for survival and survival, what does survival mean technically? It means belonging to resources and to other people. For warmth, for procreation, for community, like our bodies are just wired for that. So when we're thinking about going off on our journey where it's uncharted, you know, in America, in Australia, in Western culture, like you really are safe to do that. There's 8 billion people in the world. You're going to find your people. Like we know logically you're going to be fine. But biologically, your body doesn't still know that you're not back like hunting and gathering with lions, possibly trying to prey. And so if you detach from the community, like you, your chances of dying are higher. Well, if you are shaming somebody, what's happening is you are, your body thinks you're in the, you belong, you're in the community. And if you make somebody else look weaker, that makes you look stronger. If you push somebody out of the community, there's more resources for everyone else.
Wow, that's such a good take on that.
Yes. So like we're all getting like big, fat
ego boost.
Yes. Technically it would be like serotonin. We're getting serotonin boost all day long from like watching the downfall of these poor people that made a very terrible mistake publicly. We're getting these like not like consciously. We're not like, I feel better about my life because they're falling apart. But biologically, there's a reason why we're obsessed with it.
Yeah. It's called Schadenfreude. We're like, I think, and we're delighting in someone's misfortune. It's this, I think the German phrase. Yeah. Like we get a kick out of seeing someone else fail. And we also project our own, if that was me, or like we project, oh my gosh, the wife, like.
Totally.
There's so much projection happening
when we're watching.
Because it evokes our fears of like, what if I was cheated on? And, you know, and, but also it is an element of sowing and reaping. Like it's like, you know, the, oh, I'm choosing into living unaligned, then not that you should get shamed in front of everyone, like, but then I think sometimes like it's a natural law of gravity of like, oh, I'm kind of choosing into different things. But I would never say that someone deserves to be publicly shamed like that.
Oh gosh, no.
Oh, so rough. And oh, so painful. But I like there's the optimist in me that's like hope for let's just rewrite that narrative. You get to rewrite the narrative.
So true. But, and then when you do rewrite the narrative, I mean that particular story, like that's there's gonna be a lot of really painful consequences to that, obviously.
Yeah.
But whatever hand you've been dealt, whatever you experience. When you do rewrite that story, you become this level of like indestructible.
Yes.
That I never knew, I never believed I would ever feel. I'm like, I say all the time, it's like a joke in my house. I'm like, who cares? Who cares? And I don't mean it in like, I just did a podcast episode about this actually. I don't even mean it in a way that like nobody actually cares. But I mean it in the way that people are thinking about themselves so much more or than you, as much as you're thinking about yourself.
Yes.
You know, people, I don't believe that there are many people out there that are like actually masterminds that are like trying to tear you down or that are even like judging you all of the time. Everybody's just scared. They're all like trying to reinforce their own beliefs so that they feel safe. And once you really realize that, which I think you can only realize that when you have these sort of hopefully only experiences, but maybe even macro experiences with like getting that pushback or getting humiliated or getting canceled or whatever, because you realize you're still here.
Yeah.
I'm okay. And that's like a power nobody can take away. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, people who are like, I've been through X, Y, and Z, nothing can shake me.
Like, totally. Like,
I've been through some like insane things, and I'm like, nothing really intimidates me now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you actually kind of step through fear and you realize I'm actually okay.
Yeah.
Like, I may have had the ego maybe died.
Yes.
That's all that was, but I'm actually okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I think that's such a great point. I love that so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of want to talk about, and we'll sort of wrap up in a moment, but this is a Brené quote that actually relates to what we're saying. So owning our story and loving ourselves through that process is the bravest thing we'll ever do.
Absolutely. So that's timelessly true. No science will ever disprove that.
Because the thing is, you get to choose if love gets to walk you through that situation or shame. Like even their situation, it's like actually love is present. It's always present. So that can always be available.
Yes.
Yeah. So with something that you hit on that I think a lot of people think like, oh, I dealt with shame. Why am I still getting tested in this area? Or why is this happening to me again?
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about like how tests show up in our life? Like, because I first learned like Graham Cook kind of talked about like sometimes like tests and trials we go through and often they'll like come back around again. Like, oh, I thought I dealt with this insecurity about around leaders, or I thought I dealt with this insecurity of needing attention when I perform, but often we'll be positioned to have it circle back around again and they show up kind of like tests. But I love how you talked about recognizing your situation as a test and like, oh, I made it. Like I found myself at the side of it. It sounds like you have a good perspective on that. Can you speak a little bit about your take on tests?
Yes, absolutely. I actually think it's only been in the last few years that I really started to almost gamify a lot of aspects of my my emotional healing, you know, like video game levels. Because like the idea of tests used to really bother me. I think I'm like very protective of the way that people describe God and the character of God.
Yes.
And I would be like, he doesn't test us to, you know, but now I'm like, test is the probably just the best English word for it. But really what it is, is it's like, it's these opportunities to turn you into the person that will eventually hold the dreams that you have.
Yeah.
So I now I'm like not mad at him at all. I'm like, okay, here we go, baby. Like, this is like, I can do this. And I actually started working out in March, weight training. And I just think about like the things that I've noticed are I did like a full, this is a tangent, but I did this like full body scan where it like scans your, like your body fat and your muscle Why can't I think of all of the words? You know what I'm talking about. Everything head to toe, like your water, your bone mass, your muscle, your skeletal muscle tissue, your all of your fat, everything. And it was not good. And I feel like I've been a health person for a long time and I didn't realize I was doing some really core things wrong. And so every time I'm going to the gym and I'm lifting heavy weights and I just did another one 4 months later and so much change, pretty like in like the best way. And I'm thinking about like the consistency of going to the gym. It doesn't even feel like I haven't been killing myself. I've just been showing up and like actually just going in. And that's how I feel about these tests. They're things that like actually are strengthening you over time. And if you can pay attention to what is my vision, what's the vision of who I want to become, then how is this hard thing, this gift wrapped in sandpaper? You know, I really don't like the package that it came in, but how is this helping me heal what's in the way of me embodying the vision that I have for my life? And and I think a lot of it is mostly like pushing on these subconscious beliefs that you have. So, you know, when these tests come up and you are tempted to believe I'm a loser, I suck, I'm the worst, I'm never going to happen. That's when you know you're in a test, because you need to be in, like, in order for you to be the person that holds the dreams that you have for yourself, that version of you doesn't think she's a loser. She doesn't think that she's alone in the world. She doesn't think that she's unsupported and God is mad at her and she's been led astray. She doesn't think that. The person that is living like the things that you know you're called to do, she is solid in her motives, her intentions, her identity. She knows who she is. Otherwise, she'd be faking it. Otherwise, she'd be living in that imposter syndrome. So when something hard happens to me that nicks those insecurities, I mean, even to say like, I thought I healed this already is such a – this. I feel like this is going to sound harsh. So just know that just this week I asked that same question. But I feel so annoyed. I feel so annoyed at that. I'm like, what a waste of time to even ask it. If it's here, you didn't. If it's here, there's a deeper level of integration.
Yeah.
And that deeper level of integration means it's solidifying the truth of who you are on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And I want to really say, I genuinely said that exact same sentence to my best friend yesterday about something in my life. I was like, I thought I was, this is like the tendrils of this particular shame belief that I had. I thought I had like pruned them all. And so she reminded me of how much work I actually had done. And she was like, we keep going. And now we're looking at this angle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gosh, you're right. And it was so good for me to like even look at it from that perspective, which is the most loving thing to do. You know, like when my kids come in and they're afraid that there's a monster in their closet, I'm not like, you already asked me that yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, you should know there's not a monster in your closet. You know, that wouldn't be a good parent. Mm. And then I'm also not like, oh my gosh, maybe there is a monster in your closet. Shoot, should we move? Mm. Like, that also wouldn't be a good parent. So if he comes out again and he's still afraid of monsters, it must mean he needs connection and he needs to feel safe. So I'll go and be there with him, which will improve our relationship, which will give him a better chance at well-being later on in his life. And the same is true for the insecurities that come up within ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. And so if you're listening, guys, and you feel like you're still struggling with that same thing, we are too. You're not alone.
We're all in this together.
I know. We love, and the charismatic church culture loves to give a beginning, middle, end breakthrough story. Shiny, shiny, shiny. But I think the true indication of well-being is really learning to be in process and learning to love yourself in process. But in closing, because I think especially if you have had, you didn't get a lot of attunement in your childhood, this concept of actually connecting to yourself that you've talked about a little bit in this podcast feels very like foreign and like talking another language often. And like, cause people can understand, oh, I can connect to people, connect to God, but the connection to self, and I find it a lot of the time, it's with people who really didn't get a lot of attunement growing up. So tuning into themselves feels really like weird or doesn't feel effective. But Brené Brown, to close, and then I'll give a question over to you more on how we do this, is you either walk inside your own story and own it, or you stand outside your story and hustle for worthiness.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are standing outside of their story, hustling for worthiness and acceptance and belonging, like we've talked about.
Yeah.
And so how do we stand in our, inside our own stories? How do we, like you mentioned, like, I'm still here. Yeah. How do we connect to ourselves?
Yeah.
Oh, my camera. One second.
That's okay.
Oh.
That was so dramatic.
My battery just, I know, that was so dramatic, but it was kind of a good place for editing.
Yeah,
let me just put a new battery in. I think it's a battery. One second, and then we'll close. Sorry.
No, you're
good. I'll keep recording while I... Okay, we're back. Okay. I think because we talked for so long before, my batteries only last maybe an hour.
Oh, how so funny. That's funny.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes, I love everything you're saying, yourself, by the way. Yes, how do you connect? Yeah,
yes.
Whether it's phrases
or— Own your story.
Yeah.
Okay. You can go from that question
and then go to you.
Yes, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Sounds okay. Good.
So, you know, the thing that I would say is that it is funny you talked about like the charismatic, you know, culture wants to have like beginning, middle, end with the big victorious ending. And that can be problematic. However, I will say, and I know you would say the same thing, like healing is real. Healing, I have experienced it. And I sometimes feel like, I wonder if people are tired of me saying what I've gone through. And then I remember I was the one on Instagram feeling so alone. My only hope was seeing that other people had been where I was and got to the other side of it. So a lot of my energy goes to creating as opposed to how so much of my energy in the past went to healing.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot, but there's a lot of opportunity, obviously, for me to, there's so much more to like build with my life. And that includes a lot of healing as well. But I do feel like collecting stories of people who have gone through hard things and have gotten to the other side is actually really important for your nervous system, because we have to give your nervous system somewhere new to go. So like make sure, just as like a side thing, make sure that you are consuming content that actually really does inspire you, because it's good for your brain to see people that are that you relate to, that are doing that, that have gone through hard things and have stayed connected to themselves or have learned to, and that's really good for your brain and your body. And then falling in love with your process, honestly, it's— you are rewiring your brain. If you have a lot of shame from childhood or from traumatic events, even in adulthood, you notice that you have— your body's way of surviving the world is to try and make you think that you're less than or a bad person. You need to, well, remember that that's a survival strategy. It's a— it's a body and brain trying to keep you small. And so some of the ways that I have learned to have compassion on myself is, you know, I always think about like, well, what would I say if this was my best friend? How can I treat myself like my own best friend? My best friends, I can see the trajectory of their life and just remind them like of who they actually are. So I want to be able to do that for myself. And like, understanding that this is from Sarah Baldwin again. If you look up Sarah Baldwin, she's a great practitioner, but everything that you do makes perfect sense based on what you've been through. And really knowing and reminding yourself of that, the minute I start to worry about myself, what if something's wrong with me? That's the minute I leave myself.
Yeah.
And so like refusing to worry that there's ever something wrong with me has been essential for me to just recognize, oh, I am in process right now, or I'm being tested to make sure that I really do believe that I am worthy of the love of God as his well-loved child, of course, just like my kids are worthy of my love, of course, not a question. I really am being tested to reinforce that belief. Because it's bringing up all the parts of me that are doubting it. Great. I'm glad to see them because I want to build a relationship with those parts of me. This work, it really works.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to show up every day. Remind yourself of who you are. You have to speak to yourself and treat yourself, take care of yourself like your own best friend. You have to know that if you don't naturally want to do that, there's nothing wrong with you. Your body just is trying to keep you really small in shame. And that's for your survival. So knowing that everything makes perfect sense and showing up every day, your whole life can change. Mine did.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I love how you recognize sometimes I feel a more like a bigger knowing kind of visceral response in the idea of leaving myself. Like, oh, I know what that feels like. And so coming back to myself has been more of a muscle I've had to grow.
Same. Yeah. Over the years, for sure.
Yeah.
No one taught us how to do that.
No.
Yeah.
Because it's like so foreign. But it's like you, like I think of you, Courtney, you're such a beautiful, encouraging, wise soul. And I love being around you.
Yeah.
And so it would be sad to think that you don't love being around that girl that I love.
Right. You know? Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. It's something I work with my clients on all the time. And it's like, it's amazing to see how, exactly like you said, these brilliant, beautiful people. And and they just haven't had it modeled to them how deeply loved they are. And I wish that explanation help them snap out of it. But really, it's like choosing to love yourself over time or being loved by safe people, understanding your nervous system, understanding your body. And then pretty soon, or maybe over time, it does get embodied. And then you're the one that can't imagine why other people wouldn't love you.
Yes. So good. Oh, I love that. Yes. Because I know, and that has healed my people, not healed fully, but like that has helped my, well, I'm happy with you. I'm okay if they're not. Ella, I'm happy with you. Like, it's okay that that person's not happy with you.
Yeah, like, totally.
It's like, I'm not mad at you.
Yeah, right. Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's such a beautiful way to end the podcast. I love this. Mm. So as Courtney mentioned, she meets with clients. So you can book in a one-on-one session with her. The beauty of what we do is we can meet with anyone around the world, which is so fun.
Know.
So even if you're in Australia, you can
I do have clients
book
in
a
Australia.
Session.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we were just talking about how you've been to Australia, so you really understand the culture.
Yeah.
And also you have a podcast. I love it because you do episodes on, it's Heal Create podcast, right?
Yes,
I'm saying it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So you do episodes on healing, like stories around healing, but you also do stories around creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a, I think, it's such a great podcast because it's both inspiring, but so sound in all the psychology and theology behind it. So yeah, I just love what you bring to the world.
Thank you so much.
Was there anything in closing that you could say to my audience? Like you would, a little encouragement that you would give them in kind of moving through this?
The only thing I would add is we talked about like, you know, being your true self, knowing who you are. If you don't know who you are, pay attention to who inspires you.
Yeah.
Because other people inspire you because they embody your potential. Mm-hmm. So even if you've listened to Ella's podcast and you're like, oh, I just love her, there must be something in you that's resonating. And there's a lot of science behind that, but it was one of the best trailheads for me to find my way back home to who I am, paying attention to who inspires you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's in you.
It's just in you. They embody your potential. Mm-hmm. Yes, you are not as lost as you think you are. You might just have a lot of self-protective layers covering you up.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to put all of your links to follow you on Instagram and all of those details in the show notes. But thanks again so much for coming on again.
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for having me. It was so good to be here.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.